What's up, you guys? Welcome to this week's episode. This is episode 18 of the Marriage Prep Podcast. We've got a special guest with us today. She's actually a family friend of ours, Mallory Craycroft. She's an OBGYN. She's kind of an expert with all things women's health and physical intimacy, bodies, birth control, anything you can name regarding, I guess, your sexual experience in your marriage. She's a great person to talk to. So we're super excited to, well, we already did chat with her, but we're excited for you guys to listen and gain some of her knowledge that she has to bring to the table about women's health.
Yeah. So Mallory is an OBGYN. She's actually our OBGYN. So kind of funny there. She works at Cottonwood OBGYN, which is just in Murray, Utah. So if anyone is looking for someone awesome and you're in that area,
they've got a lot of good doctors.
They have a lot of great doctors there. So you guys should definitely head over there. She's actually also starting an Instagram, or she's been doing an Instagram account, which is called Mallory Craycroft MD, talking about like women's health and wellness, which is super powerful. So if you guys aren't following that, definitely go check her out. Go follow that as well. But this episode, like I said, we wanted to bring her on, talk about birth control, sexual intimacy, to really dive deep in with an expert who can expound on these topics a little better than Allie and I can. So we
Definitely. We will give the disclaimer though, as you're listening, for those of you who are waiting to get to be intimate before or until after you're married, it's definitely one of those things where the more that you think about intimacy, it becomes more of a temptation. And so this is definitely one of those episodes you want to be careful of.
Sure.
If you are dating or engaged, but you're not married yet and you're trying to be careful, I would maybe hold off on listening to this, at least not while you're together.
Yeah.
Just because she gets pretty explicit.
There's
with
some
the
intense
things
parts.
That, yeah, yeah, for sure. And it's very, very, very helpful information. I think for me, it would have been perfect to listen to maybe on a honeymoon or right before you get married to prepare yourself mentally. And I will say the first half is more like, okay, here's what you can expect. Mm-hmm. And then the second half is kind of more like explicit, like, okay, within the sexual experience, here's some things that you can do. So that's the part that I would say you could even listen to the first half before as you're preparing. And
especially if you're like needing to get some information on birth control, the first half is going to be really helpful for you. Yeah. But the whole episode is honestly really, really great.
It was so fun to chat with her.
Yeah, you're going to learn a ton. We learned a ton. And so it's really great for anyone in any position, no matter where you're at. We hope that you guys enjoy this episode.
Definitely. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Marriage Prep Podcast. I'm Nathan Hooper.
And I'm Allie Hooper. In this podcast, we will give you all the resources that you need to go from dating or engaged to creating a lasting marriage that will bring you more happiness than you ever thought possible.
Here, we're going to interview experts and discuss important topics like how to know if your partner is right for you. We will provide you guys a list of questions and conversations that you need to be having to make sure you're both ready for marriage and on the same page.
We will even dive deep into topics like sexual intimacy, finances, how to have a fair fight, and a whole lot more to make sure you can step up to that altar with complete confidence.
So subscribe now and make sure you guys don't miss any episodes, and we'll see you in there.
What is up, you guys? Welcome to episode 18 of the Marriage Prep Podcast. Today, we have with us a very special guest. It's Mallory Craycroft. So welcome to the podcast, Mallory.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Mallory and I were in the same ward for a few years back. I can't remember how long ago it was. She was a leader in our young women's group. And that's kind of how I got to know her. But she's actually an OBGYN. And so we're super excited. This episode, we're going to be focusing on things you might not think about in terms of preparing for sexual intimacy, assuming that you've been waiting and haven't become sexually active yet, but that's going to be a change when you do get married. So Mallory's got lots of great knowledge and wisdom that she's going to bring to this episode. So we'll be chatting a little bit more about that. But before we get into it, Mallory, I'd like to give you an opportunity to just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey to becoming an OBGYN, what brought you to the field and what caused you to have that interest in that specific field?
Sure. I have been an OBGYN I was in training for 4 years, and then I've been out of training for 9 years, so 13 years now. And I knew that I wanted to go to medical school, but really knew nothing about obstetrics and gynecology. I had no familiarity with it. And my first year of training had to do a shadowing rotation with an OBGYN and just absolutely fell in love with it. It's such a fun combination of taking care of happy, healthy women and taking care of their yearly exams, but also then their babies and helping do surgeries. And it's a really nice mix of care for women. And I've really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah. And we people probably already know this. By the time this episode is airing, we'll probably already have had our baby, but we're expecting, and we got to come and see Mallory, and she did such a great job of just answering all of our questions. And I was just shocked at how worried I was before the appointment. And then after the appointment, how relieved I felt like having all those answers. So I know Mallory does a lot of good with all of her patients in just the amount of knowledge she has about women's health. And we talked about this in the intro, but Mallory's got an awesome Instagram she's working on that just promotes women's wellness. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that, Mallory, and what your plans are with that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I have an Instagram account, Mallory Craycroft MD, and have been focused on trying to bring more focus on wellness into women's lives. I think in my clinical practice, it's easy to focus on the physical well-being and on what people should do to fix their periods or fix their pain with sex or different things like that. But through this other avenue, I'm able to talk about the things that I kind of run out of time or don't have the focus to talk about in clinic, like what people are doing to take care of their spirits and what people are doing to take care of their social wellness and their emotional wellness and coping and stress and all of these really wonderful things that I don't feel like enough people are talking about, but affect us all so deeply. So it's been a passion project of mine and hopefully good things to come in the future.
Yeah, totally. So everybody definitely go follow that. I think that's going to be super helpful for especially our female listeners who are just wanting to improve their overall wellness and health. I think that's awesome.
Absolutely.
So we're super excited about that.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I think the first thing that we wanted to talk about a little bit is let's just kind of give you an opportunity. Let's pretend an imaginary scenario here that a young couple or a young woman is coming into your office wanting to prepare for becoming sexually active. Let's say that she's abstaining, like a lot of our listeners are members of the church. And so most of them are likely not sexually active right now, but once they get married, they will be. So what are the pieces of advice or things that you would tell to someone who really hasn't had a lot of dialogue or conversation from a medical standpoint, whether it was from their parents or whoever, they really aren't sure what they're getting into? What advice, general advice, would you give to someone coming into your office?
Sure. Yeah. I will say, first of all, that if you don't live in Utah and you try to call your gynecologist and schedule a premarital visit, they will not know what you're talking about and will not schedule it for you. So if you have never been sexually active before and you feel like you would like to talk to a gynecologist about anatomy or birth control, then you would just call and schedule a problem visit, a birth control consultation, or something along those lines. But most places in the world don't know what a premarital visit is. It's kind of made up in Utah. And in Utah, if you schedule one, doctors will know what it is, but some doctors really don't know why you're there. I think the idea that you really would have had no sexual intimacy before marriage is kind of foreign to a lot of people. And so I think when you call to schedule it, a lot of doctors are like, well, like, what do you want me to do? So just know that going into it. I will also say that it's not absolutely necessary to schedule a premarital visit. And I'll go into that a little bit more. But basically, if there is value in the premarital visit, and what I like to talk about is number one, anatomy, number two, birth control, and number three, questions about intimacy or how to make that experience and that transition, whatever the patient wants it to be. So the first thing I'll usually talk about is just anatomy. And a lot of women who, and warning out there for people who may have sensitive ears, I'm a gynecologist, so I don't have very good filters when we start talking about this type of thing. So when we talk about anatomy, I think for women who have used tampons regularly, especially larger tampons or have heavy flow periods, or women who use menstrual cups, for the most part, they're worried that if the vaginal opening is going to be comfortable enough when they have sex, if they've been using tampons and using menstrual cups, for the most part, those women will be just fine. It's almost impossible to have regular use of tampons with heavy periods and not to have kind of opened up the vaginal opening a little bit. So a lot of women are concerned about that. If women have never been able to use a tampon because it's really painful for them, that is a good reason to see a gynecologist, because that might be pretty painful to become intimate and to have sex, because that vaginal opening has probably never been stretched, and or there may be an issue there that makes it painful to use tampons. So for sure, if tampons are painful, then do see a gynecologist. So that's kind of what I start with, is just review of the anatomy and to say, you look normal. Everything looks completely normal. I think for women who are going to be exposed in front of their partners for the first time, some women get nervous about, like, is there something weird about me? You know, so that can be, I think, reassuring for some patients too.
Totally. I love that. And I think it's really helpful that you are so open and you just you're talking about it from a medical standpoint, because it is, we're talking about our bodies. But I think following along on your Instagram would help a lot of women too, just to be comfortable with, okay, this is normal, this is okay, because that is a big thing, a big issue that really only people who abstain from sexual intimacy before marriage will really run into. Most people are probably going to be sexually active from a much younger age than if you're waiting to be married first. So I think that's really, really helpful. Anything else you would add about anatomy before maybe you go into, I'd like to hear more about birth control as well, but anything else on the subject of anatomy that you would discuss with them?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I think the other thing that's helpful in general is for women to know their anatomy. So this is going to sound really weird to some people, but if you've never taken a mirror and looked at your anatomy, think about it. It's really helpful to just kind of know what's going on down there. I think a lot of people, when they come into me and I'll say, well, they say I'm having pain, and I'll say, is it pain in your labia or is it pain in the vaginal opening? And I get like a deer in the headlights, like, what? I don't know. It's all that stuff down there. And I think it's just good for humans to know their body parts. So I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, to kind of take a look. And if you're nervous to take a mirror and look at your own anatomy, then do some cautious Googling and look at an anatomy textbook and just kind of see what parts are called what, because there's no shame in that. It's your body part. You should know what they're called.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. Cool. I think that's like a good exercise because I think the transition from never having sex to being married and having a sexual partner that you'll probably hopefully have for the rest of your life, that's a scary transition. And so I think finding appropriate ways to get comfortable with your body, that seems like a really good place to start.
So. Have there been any, Mallory, has there been any like resources that you'll recommend or use, like websites or books, that will be good for like learning more about your anatomy in a safe place? Like, because we know like Googling can be a little dangerous.
Yes, that's right. I can't say, because we just have our flip books that we have in clinic, but any gynecologist can help you through that. But I think it's pretty easy to come by. If you just said female anatomy textbook, I think, and I can find a resource and you can put it in the show notes, because that will be maybe safer for you. But there are plenty of good resources that are not pornographic or not scary in that way.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much. Cool. So then, yeah, a big question I think a lot of people have is regarding birth control, because there are so many options. And I would assume, I'm sure you'll talk about this, I would assume every woman is different in terms of what might be best for them. But let's say that someone doesn't really know anything about birth control. Maybe they've heard about the pill, or maybe they've heard of what an IUD is. What are some of the most common forms of birth control, and maybe some of the pros and cons to those for women? Just, we can keep it somewhat brief, but what would you say to that?
Sure. I think the first thing, as you mentioned, is that birth control is a really personal option. And I have a lot of patients who will come in saying, I don't want this, I don't want this, I don't want this. And I always encourage you to go to the gynecologist with an open mind. If you've talked to a friend and they said, oh, I hated the IUD because it caused pain, and so then you say, oh, I hate IUDs because my friend hated it, you may just be limiting yourself. Everyone has different priorities when it comes to contraception. Some couples, maybe younger couples who are busy in school, it might be a really bad time for them to have an accidental pregnancy. So they may want to focus more on more secure methods of contraception. I think some couples are maybe getting married a little bit older, or are planning to have a baby in the next 3 to 6 months. And so they say, well, we want to use birth control for a few months, but then it's fine if we had an accident. Well, great, use whatever you want, right? So I think number one is figure out what your priorities are with contraception. Number two, there can be medical conditions that would be contraindicated with certain birth control options. The main ones we run into are history of a blood clot or blood clotting disorder in your family. That's a big deal to bring up with your doctor and would really limit your options. And number two would be high blood pressure. That can limit your options. Otherwise, I think most things are on the table. Smoking is an issue, but hopefully, I don't know, maybe it's an issue with your audience or not, but that would be something to bring up with your doctor as well. Otherwise, if your priority is to really not have a baby right now, you need something reliable, then you just want to be honest with yourself. If you're really good at taking medication, or you're already taking a medication, then a birth control pill would be really reasonable for you. If you're terrible at taking pills, then you may want to think about an option that doesn't involve taking a pill, like an IUD. I think some people will say, I don't want to use birth control because I don't want hormones. And there is a copper IUD called the Paragard that's really helpful for those women. It's an IUD that has a little copper coil on it. It goes in the uterus. And the women who like it because there's no chance of hormonal side effects, zero chance. 90% of women who use it will say they feel like they're not using birth control, just regular old periods. 10% have heavier periods. So every method of birth control has a downside. There's just no way around it. And it's just a matter of figuring out what downside are you willing to tolerate or not willing to tolerate. If you already have crazy heavy periods, you probably don't want the thing that's going to give you heavier periods. If you have really light periods and you don't want to use hormones, then that option would be perfect for you. So I think priorities first.
Awesome. I think that's super, super helpful. And for people who don't know anything about any of those birth forms of birth control, so there's an IUD, there's the pill, there's what else? There's like the NuvaRing. Can you remind me kind of go through briefly what all of those options might be so people can kind of have a starting point of what things they should be looking up and looking into?
Sure. So yeah, there's two different IUDs. The one that I mentioned has no hormone, the copper one. And then there are a few different progesterone IUDs. Some are smaller, some have lower hormones, some are bigger. And those ones in general make your periods really light or go away altogether. And usually have fewer systemic side effects than other hormonal birth control options because they're just not absorbed quite as much. So if you're trying to go lower hormone, but still like the idea of lighter periods, the IUDs are really great. Also, the IUDs are some of the most reliable methods of birth control. So that can be a really good option as well. There's also several different birth control pills, many, many different birth control pills. If you have tried a birth control pill and you hated it, chances are there is a pill that would do okay for you. It's just a matter of if you want to put in the time to keep trying one after the other after the other. So I think some people will try one pill and then say, I'm never using a pill again. And that's an option. But there are a lot of different birth control options in terms of a pill. And then there's the NuvaRing, like you mentioned. The NuvaRing is a little plastic ring that goes in the vagina that you can change once a month. So that's a nice in-between option where you do have to change it once a month, but you don't have to think about it every day. And that one can be really nice. A lot of women really like that. It can cause a little bit of spottiness. And it can be a little more pricey than some of the others, but people worry about like feeling it. Will I feel like there's something in me all the time? And that's not usually the case. Usually you can't feel it at all while it's in there. And then there's a birth control patch. I personally don't have a lot of patients on the patch because it leaves often that little black mark, like when you wear a Band-Aid too long and it gets that adhesive mark. A lot of women don't like constantly having something on their skin, and it's not great for women who are obese, but that can be a reasonable option as well. And then let's see, there are the Depo-Provera shot. That's a shot of progesterone that you get once every 3 months. And the Nexplanon, which is an implant that goes in the arm that releases progesterone for up to 4 years, 3 to 4 years, depending on what data you're looking at.
Awesome. Okay, that is super, super helpful. I think a lot of people don't realize there are that many options. So I think that's good for people to realize. I think a lot of my friends just said, okay, the IUD is the best. It's super easy. You don't have to worry about it. And so that's what I did. But I think you make a good point. Let's think about what our priorities are as a couple and as an individual, and then find what's best for us, not for like what everyone uses, if that makes sense. So,
and I will also say that the other options I left out would be condoms. Condoms are a mixed bag. The nice thing about condoms is really no chance of hormonal side effects and really no chance of other side effects other than pregnancy. So that's again, one of those times when you say, well, if we had an accidental baby, it would be fine. Or we are really good at using condoms. We will never forget. We will never have a mistake. Then those can be, it's a really reasonable option. I know some OBGYNs are like, well, don't use condoms unless you want to get pregnant. I don't think that's true. I think sometimes condoms are great for couples, but you just have to be really honest with yourself about if it doesn't work or if it breaks. The last method I didn't talk about is just natural family planning, or the timing method where you can track your cycles. If you don't have regular cycles, it will not work for you. But if you have really regular, predictable cycles and you're tracking on an app, that can be really reasonable. The idea is that you track your cycles really carefully and then you avoid sex during the fertile week. And that can be augmented by tracking other symptoms that you have, like changes in your body goes through. And if you track all of those things, you can get really good at it. I still would say if having a baby would really mess up your life, using that method may not be the best idea for you, because it's just, you get a weird cycle where you ovulate a couple days later than you thought you would. And it only takes one time for some couples. So, but that can be a really nice option for people who just don't want to mess with their bodies. They don't want to put any hormones in and they're really on it and good at tracking it. That can be a great option for people too.
Awesome. I love that. Yeah. And I love what you said. Like, it really only takes one time. So just make sure that you're aware if you're sexually active and you do opt with something that's maybe slightly less reliable, be prepared that that's always an option, you know, that something could go wrong. I know we weren't necessarily planning for our baby and she came anyway. So sometimes they just come when they want to come, and that's okay. Right. But awesome. So anything else you would add to the birth control topic before we move on to just kind of questions about intimacy?
I don't think so. I think that's it.
Awesome. Okay.
Oh, I will say one more thing.
Yeah.
I will say too, with birth control, people shouldn't feel too committed to one option. I think some people think they're making a decision that has to last for the rest of their lives. And insurance right now with the Affordable Care Act is really good at paying for birth control. So if you have insurance and you get an IUD and you hate it, I personally am always really open to take it out and try something else. Or if you try a pill and you hate it, try something else. So don't feel like you're making a decision that you'll never be able to change.
Totally. And I was going to say for our listeners who still have questions and maybe your OBGYN, maybe let's say you don't live in Utah and they're just, or whatever, I would say follow Mallory's Instagram and maybe message her if you have more questions, because it sounds like she's a really great resource as well. Yeah. So I'm really excited to talk more about intimacy. We chatted a little bit last night, Mallory, about some of the things that you would, I guess, advise to couples that have never been intimate. It's a big, big change in someone's life to go from never having sex to, like I said, having that partner that you'll have probably for most of your life. So I guess let's dive into that. What would you say to a person who comes in? And I guess the first thing that I think I hear a lot of people worry about is what if the sex is painful? So I guess let's start there. What would you say to a person whose fear or concern is that intimacy becoming painful?
Sure. I think the number one thing, so sex should never be painful long term. So sometimes it takes some adjusting and getting used to, but if every time is as painful as the time before, something's wrong and you need to see a gynecologist. And every gynecologist will agree with that. The one thing I should have said before with the anatomy is if your anatomy is very, very tight, like it's too tight to get a tampon in, or you're worried, like if you put a finger inside your vagina and you cannot even get two fingers inside, that may be a little more painful for you to have sex initially. One of the things that your doctor can offer is lidocaine gel. It's a numbing gel, and you can put it on the vaginal opening so that if that vaginal opening feels a little more stretched, then it can be a little more numb. You just put it on 5 or 10 minutes before you plan to have penetration, and that can help a lot. So you shouldn't be having to use that every time, but as you're just having sex the first couple times, that can help. Another thing that can be helpful is dilators. So if you go to the gynecologist, or you don't go to the gynecologist, but you feel like you're very, very tight, you can buy dilators on Amazon. They're silicone dilators. They're usually graded, so there will be multiple sizes. The first one is usually like the size of your pinky finger or maybe your ring finger, and you just put it into the vagina and leave it there. And then slowly it'll kind of stretch as you go up on the size of the dilators. And that can really help with pain the first time. Some people need it and some people don't. So it's not something that you have to do, but if you're worried about pain, that can help. And then if it's really, really tight, there is a small procedure that gynecologists can do called the hymenotomy, where we make a little snip in the hymen. I personally do it in the office and patients tolerate it very, very well. I just use lidocaine cream and numb the skin with that, and then just a tiny little snip, and it will just help that so it doesn't tear. That again is not absolutely necessary at all. But if that's something that a woman explores her anatomy and feels like, oh man, I am so tight, I can't even get one finger all the way in my vagina, then that's something that's available to you. Now, the other thing is that pain with sex that first time, hopefully it's not going to be super painful and more on just the tight side. With couples, their experiences can be really, really different. So I think when you have couples who are, quote, not having sex before marriage, right? Some couples will be very, very minimal, and they will have a quick peck on the lips and that's all. They never cross any boundaries. They don't go anywhere close to any boundaries. And then you have couples who do everything except have, quote, penetrating intercourse. And they may define those things really different ways. They may have a lot of exploration and a lot of intimacy. Those couples, that is going to be a much shorter journey to full penetrating intercourse than the couples who have a quick peck on the cheek, right? So just recognizing there's no right or wrong from where I'm standing. There's just where you are. And you have to recognize that where you are as a couple, if you're having a quick peck on the lips and that's the most that you've ever been intimate, that's wonderful. But recognize that you've got a lot of territory to cover between there and penetrating intercourse. And that's wonderful and exciting. And you can spend as long as you want to trying to get to penetrating intercourse. That doesn't necessarily have to be the goal on your wedding night, right? The goal is just to increase intimacy from where you're at right now and explore and move forward until you get to that point. So it is in no way a failure if you don't have full penetrating intercourse because it's too painful for you.
Thank you. I really like that. I know that there definitely are a huge range of couples who, like you said, they have those, some people are very physically connected, and others not so much. They kind of have very strong boundaries. So I think that's, it's super important to acknowledge that it's okay if you and your spouse are not like having this amazing moment on like penetrating intercourse and both having an orgasm like on the first night, that that might not be a realistic expectation, and that's okay. So totally. I really appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So thank you for sharing all those things. And just to backtrack a little bit, I know you mentioned that sex shouldn't be painful long term. What should a woman do if they've tried all the things that we just talked about and she's still having troubles and that intimacy, that penetration is still painful for her?
Yeah, I think there are some little twinges that people get nervous about that aren't necessarily anything wrong. So some people's anatomy is uncomfortable. So if a woman's partner hits the cervix, for some people that will cause them a little twinge of sharp pain that's usually manageable just with position changes. So that's not necessarily something wrong. If some women are pretty sensitive to a full bladder, or if they have to have a bowel movement, or if they have gas, some of that is very uncomfortable, and that's not going to happen every single time. So that's something that you can pay attention to. What else is going on in your body that may be causing discomfort? But if you're really having a difficult time finding sex to be not painful, then you should see your gynecologist. Some of the things we see are those pelvic floor muscles can be too tight, and that can happen from especially sexual trauma. That can be a big thing. And if a woman has had sexual trauma in her life, I always think it's a good idea to see a gynecologist before becoming sexually active with a new partner, if they feel like that would be helpful. Seeing a sex therapist, which some people don't even know is a thing, but there are therapists who specialize in sex. So there are lots and lots of things, and there are physical conditions. There's one called vestibulitis, where it's inflammation of the vaginal opening that can be treated with medication. So if sex continues to be painful, there's something wrong. Be sure you see your gynecologist.
Awesome.
Very cool. One question I have for you too, Mallory, is like, I know there's a lot of like myths or like wives' tales, especially I guess maybe more among the guys, among the girls as well. Like, of if you've never been sexually active, like a bunch of different people say a bunch of different things. Like, what are some things we can expect or we shouldn't expect? Or like, what's true, what's not true? You know, like people will talk about bleeding and talk about all these different things. Like, what should we like be prepared for?
Sure. That's a great question. I think that bleeding doesn't always happen. Sometimes that hymenal ring is that little crescent of little weak tissue that sometimes tears, or that's what you're stretching with the dilators. And if it does tear, sometimes it can bleed a little bit. It shouldn't even be like a heavy day of a period. It would be like the lightest day of a period, or like one time when you wipe. So if sometimes it can be a little heavier with that, and I wouldn't be worried about it, probably nothing's wrong. Just hold some pressure there and it should go away, no problem. I think the one of the most damaging myths can be that men's sex drive is way higher than women's. I think that when couples hear that, if a woman has a high sex drive, she sometimes will feel like there's something wrong with her. And sometimes if a man doesn't have a super high sex drive, then he feels like there's something wrong with him. And there's no right or wrong. There's just you and your partner. And navigating that can be tricky in the best of circumstances without adding in pressure of what's normal or not normal. So I would say, if you want to have sex, talk to your partner about it and say, hey, I really love having sex with you. Let's have more sex. That would be great for me if we did that. And if you are having trouble having sex, then it's worth looking into either, is it uncomfortable for you? Is it painful? Is it not stimulating you? Are there things that you can learn about so that it can be a better experience for you? Some people, even when the experience is great, will just not quite be into it. But I would say like, well, you just must want to be one of those people who doesn't like sex. I would say do lots of research and questioning to say, well, what have we not tried that may make the sex experience better for us? I think that's not necessarily something that would come up on the first many times that you're having sex, because as you're trying to figure it all out, you know, that's not really one of the things that comes up at the very beginning. But definitely, if you on your honeymoon feel like your partner, I think for women sometimes, if they feel like, well, my husband is supposed to have this like raging sex drive, and we've only had sex one time today, and they're supposed to want to have sex with me 5 times on our honeymoon, then they feel like something must be terribly wrong with me. Like, no, that's not true. Just go and enjoy your intimacy, however it evolves, and don't worry that there's some normal number of times to have sex.
Totally. I really love that. That was a good question, Nathan. Yeah, I remember feeling that way, like these unrealistic expectations that men just want to have sex all the time, and that their sex drives are like, every man has an extremely high libido And that isn't always the case in women's. I like what you said, women and men can be different and every person is different. I do want to talk a little bit about that, specifically just some of the differences in the anatomy of men versus women. I think we talked a little bit about this. We had one other episode about sexual intimacy and some things that we've learned about ourselves. But I think a lot of people who have never been sexually active might not realize, for example, that women take a lot longer to become aroused than men do. And so can we talk a little bit about that and ways to overcome that and ensure that the men and women are on kind of equal playing fields before reaching penetration?
Sure. Yeah. I would say, first off, that is not a complete rule. So if you are a man and you're having a long time trying to get aroused, I wouldn't feel bad about that. I would just accept it as like curiosity, like, oh, okay, what can we do differently? But sometimes the pressure for the man to be like, well, I'm supposed to get aroused really quickly and I'm not. So what's wrong with me? Like, just let go of all of the what's wrong with me and just notice what's happening between you and your partner. But in terms of the arousal, I would say a couple things. Number one, recognize that sex and intimacy are about so much more than penis and vagina, right? And that's a really wonderful thing because you have a whole body and he has a whole body and you get to explore and see what feels good and what you like. And that's a really wonderful thing. And so don't let it come down to just penis and vagina because you'll be missing out on so many wonderful things. So there are lots of different erogenous zones. And for some women and men, it's neck. Some people it's kissing. Some people it's breast. Some people it's abdomen, hip. You can do whatever you want to do. That's the nice thing about it. It's your bedroom and it's the two of you. It's a very private, intimate experience. And that's really a wonderful thing to explore those other erogenous zones, especially if you're having trouble. So if you go into your wedding night thinking like, okay, so it's, we got married, we're in our bedroom, take off all our clothes, penis in vagina, right? That may not go very well. It might go great, in which case go with it, follow your instincts. But if that feels weird for you, if that feels like a massive jump for you, then explore the other things. Start where you've been comfortable with kissing or making out or touching or whatever, and go from there. I think in terms of what you said just about like female anatomy, that a lot of times we hear for women, it's all about the clitoris. And that's a mixed bag. So the clitoris can be the peak of stimulation for women, but a lot of people also feel a lot of other stimulation along their perineum, along the vagina, along the labia. The labia minora actually, for most women, become engorged before the clitoris. And it's stimulating the labia minora. Those are the smaller lips inside, for people who don't know the anatomy, the smaller lips inside that are not hair bearing. That can be a way more stimulating first area as the clitoris gets ready. If the clitoris is not ready, it doesn't actually feel that great to get touched. It's actually kind of a sensitive little part of our skin. And so some men in their best intentions will just start stimulating right off the bat, the clitoris, and it's probably not going to work, at least not very quickly, because the clitoris is just really sensitive. And if you just start touching it over and over, it doesn't necessarily get stimulated. So stimulating in other ways first with the other erogenous zones, but then labia minora, and then getting around to the clitoris can be really beneficial for some women. Some women is all about the clitoris. Some women, it's all about the vagina. Everyone's different. And so you'll figure it out on your own. One thing that can be helpful for women, especially if they're a little bit nervous or uncomfortable, is to stay clothed a little bit longer, which sounds really weird because the whole thing is about take your clothes off and wear sexy lingerie. But if the idea of that makes you really uncomfortable, then it's not going to be a very fun experience for you. And the labia get engorged with blood flow as you get warm. And so that's why friction is really helpful. But if you're in sexy lingerie and you're freezing cold, it's going to be harder to get turned on. So even just underwear, or for some people, maybe not on your wedding night, maybe on your wedding night, I don't know, but sweatpants or leggings, some people stimulating through the clothing to begin with actually helps. So if you're having a really difficult time getting stimulated or getting aroused by your partner touching you, then sometimes actually putting some clothes back on, so it's less like skin rubbing on skin to start with, and getting warm and getting that heat going, and then taking your clothes off can be really helpful too. So there's weird, I won't say weird, like freaky weird, but there's plenty of different things to explore and plenty of different things you can try. But for women, it's often heat and often sort of full vulva, which is that whole area. It's that whole stimulation before just clitoris. And then as a woman orgasms, that really is where the clitoris can sort of get a woman all the way to orgasm. And then after orgasm, the clitoris becomes very, very sensitive. So again, well-meaning partners often will see that their partner is having just this amazing orgasm, and they will just, then start stimulating more and more. And at that point, it might become a little more sensitive. So then you have to do something else.
Right.
Nice.
Awesome. I think that's going to be really, really, really helpful for a lot of people. So thank you.
Make sure that if you're not ready for this material, that you listen to it when you are ready. Like,
oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, that's okay. No, it's good.
The other thing, can I say one more thing?
Yeah,
of course.
Is I think that again, this is all about you as a couple and finding what you're comfortable with. I'll tame it down here. I'll reel it in.
No, you're good.
But good. With getting ready for lingerie, a lot of women at their bridal showers will get these really scanty lingerie. And if you look at your wedding night and you are just dying to be in something sexy and lacy and thong for your partner, for your husband, then amazing. Do that. If the idea of that makes you very uncomfortable, don't feel like you have to do that. You can find really, really beautiful lingerie that still exposes you. You know, it can go really deep in the front. It can go really deep in the back. It can be a little bit see-through. It can be a little bit flowy. I just think that sometimes we think lingerie and you think like, well, I'm just so uncomfortable with that. And if you're uncomfortable, it's not going to be a very fun experience. So think about what makes you feel absolutely beautiful and wear that. And I promise your partner will be just fine with it. He's not going to be like, oh man, that's not as see-through as I wanted. Wear that a different night. You'll get there. But just feel like that first exposure should be exactly what you are the most comfortable and what makes you feel the most beautiful and the most sexy and the most appealing. And if that's not a tiny little thing, then don't wear that. Wear something else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I really, really love that. Just two thoughts that I was having while was just kind of this whole time that you've been talking, just to kind of sum up what you've been saying is do what makes you comfortable. Like every couple is going to be very different. And so that's okay. That's perfectly normal. And it's called intimacy because it's not the same for everyone. It's your intimacy. It's between the two of you and keep that between the two of you. And you've got your whole lives to explore together and figure it out. And so I would just say, be patient. Like you've got years and years and years to explore. And that's kind of exciting. And so you don't have to feel like you have to get to where your expectations based on maybe movies or just other unrealistic expectations might be on the first night. You've got your whole lives. And so ease into it and save things to look forward to down the line as well. That's okay too. Cause I think a lot of people feel overwhelmed that they have to have this amazing movie scene experience on their wedding night. And that isn't always the case. So Nathan, was there anything you wanted to add?
Yeah. Well, something that we talked about, Mallory, in our last sexual episode was about how like the most important sex organ is actually like the brain. That's like the most important thing. So I wanted to get your opinion, and especially as you're doing this wellness Instagram, like what are some things that we can do to make sure that like we have like the right mentality for sex, or we have like, what are some like sexual wellness tips to make sure we have the best experience possible from like a mental standpoint?
Ooh, I love this question so much. I could talk about this for a long time. I think that in general, when I talk about wellness, I talk about a couple of things. One is no judgment. So if you are trying to improve your life, it does zero good to feel guilty about anything or to feel like you shouldn't feel a certain way. There's zero value in that. It will not offer anything useful to your life. So if when it comes to sex, if you're feeling like, gosh, I wish I could orgasm more quickly or more consistently, or I wish I could pleasure my partner better. And then you're like, dang it, why am I such a bad partner? Because I don't know how to turn on my husband. That's not helpful. So let it go. No judgment. The biggest thing you can do is observe. Just be curious. Be interested. See how things go. If something really works for the two of you one time, talk about it and say, that was amazing for me. Can we do that again? Like, just pay attention to it and then communicate it. But really get the judgment and the guilt out of there. There's no value. It will not add anything to your life. Another thing that I talk a lot about in my wellness program is that the idea of self-love and self-acceptance. And the thing I love most about this is that as we come to love ourselves better, number one, we are far more attractive to our partners, because what's more attractive to a partner than someone who just radiates confidence and love and goodness, right? There's nothing more attractive than that. So as you become more comfortable with you, you'll be more attractive to your partner. More importantly is you'll be more in love with yourself. You'll be more confident with yourself. You'll be happier with yourself. And that means when something awkward happens during sex, as it will, that you can laugh at it because you know at your essence, you are comfortable with who you are. And that, of course, there's a lot incorporated in that. But I would say, first and foremost, self-love and no judgment. And the last thing I'll say about that is stress. So stress is quite literally the opposite of orgasm. I talk a lot in my Instagram about the idea of stress and our caveman ancestries and women of like, what were we meant to do? We were made to stay safe from the predators, saber-toothed tigers, right? So if a saber-toothed tiger is running behind you, the last thing you're going to do is orgasm, right? That seems like a bad idea. The last thing you want to do is make a baby or go to the bathroom or do any of those things. If a tiger is chasing you, you're going to say, I need all of my resources that my body has to run and defend myself. So if you take that tiger, that idea of stress, and put it into this scenario, if you're having stress, the last thing your body thinks it should do is have an orgasm or make a baby because it's trying to keep you safe. It doesn't know that it's not a tiger. It doesn't know that you're stressed about your husband or that you're stressed about that extra little muffin top that you have. It doesn't know that that is not actually threatening you. All it knows is that you feel stress. So it's going to take all your resources and take them away from having sex. So the best thing you can do with sex is to breathe, relax, be happy in it, be in love with your partner, explore. If you don't feel like having sex, then focus on other forms of intimacy till you do focus on having sex, but getting that stress out of it. Stress, judgment, no point.
I really love that. Thank you so much. Any other questions you had, Nathan?
No, yeah. I mean, that's the biggest one. Just like, I feel like if you're not in that right space mentally, it's going to be tough. Like if you're feeling uncomfortable wearing something, then like you're not going to have as good of an experience than would you if you were feeling completely comfortable and just in love and just had this vulnerable like moment versus when you're trying to like be someone that you're not or do something that you're not or do something you're not comfortable with. So I love that and totally agree.
Yeah. I would just add that we talk a lot on this podcast about expectations because I think really the biggest issue that couples have is they expect one thing and they find that the reality of marriage or whatever is something totally different. And so having this expectation for yourself or your partner or your first time that's unrealistic can cause a lot of stress. And I love what you said about how stress is the opposite of orgasm. And it would be so hard to have this lovely moment when you're just so stressed. And so I love everything we've talked about so far in terms of do what's comfortable for you, remove the judgment, get in a good place. And if your wedding night comes and you're feeling stressed, do whatever is comfortable to you, even if that doesn't involve sexual penetration. There's lots of other things that you can do, but the most important thing is focusing on that connection with your spouse and alleviating the stress in whatever way is best for you. Don't expect that your sexual journey is going to be exactly the same as everyone else's that you've heard about. For me, that was a big thing that I had to learn. And I'm still learning 2 years into marriage is not comparing and not wondering, okay, am I doing this right? Because the right way is what you and your partner find is best for the two of you. So I really like that. Anything you would add, Mallory?
Yeah, just there are some experts who actually say for women who are really, really freaked out about sex, about their first experience or not their first experience, for some women, sex can be really a cause of stress and nervousness. And some experts will actually suggest meditating or actually doing like a warm-up, like a mental warm-up before intimacy, because it can be a little bit unsettling for some women to be expected, especially you guys have talked about like good girl syndrome. You know, you have this, like, you're just supposed to like take this barrier down all of a sudden. And for some women, it can be really unsettling and can cause sort of a domino effect moving forward. So if sex seems really scary for you or really unsettling, then go really, really slowly. Do not force it because it can really have longer term implications. And I would ease into it. I would take some alone time and go to the restroom or go somewhere else and just close your eyes and take a couple deep breaths and relax and focus on love and goodness and, you know, those good feelings with you and your partner. And then go be with your partner prepared that way instead of prepared with like fear and anxiety. And don't feel like that you're weird if you have to do that. For some women and men, I'm sure, it's just a big deal. And acknowledge that and try consciously to kind of settle into it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Another thing that's coming to my mind that I'd like to just discuss for a minute is I know I've talked to friends, I've had experiences like this myself where it's tricky. I think the complexity of a woman's body, and I think a man's body too, but especially a woman's body, there's a lot to learn. And I think that sometimes it can be overwhelming to feel like, I don't know. I've had a lot of people who say as women, they take a long time, like weeks before they're able to figure out how to have an orgasm. And so I think that's an issue with, especially with people who have never been sexually active and then they're just jumping right in and it's kind of scarier and they're not sure how to start. I know you mentioned a little bit about stimulating not just the clitoris, but the labia minora and other erogenous zones. What other advice would you give to couples who are married and they're starting on that journey and they might be struggling with that? Because I know that is a source of stress for a lot of women. They're like, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to figure this out, right? So what advice would you give to those couples?
Yeah, that's such a good question because it can be such a source of emotional difficulty between couples because the poor partner wants nothing more than for his partner to have an orgasm. And the harder he tries, then the worse it gets, you know, and then he feels like a failure and she feels like a failure. And it can be really upsetting to people. So one of the things I would say is to chase the stimulation, chase the orgasm. So if you've tried and now it's pain is going to get in the way of orgasm, usually for women at first. So, you know, the first couple of times you may not orgasm. And if you do, well done, nothing wrong with you. If you're not hypersexual, if you do orgasm first time. But if orgasm becomes a problem for you, then I would say chase it. So if you're making out or if he's stimulating your neck or stimulating your breasts and nipples, and you start to feel really turned on, you start to feel aroused, keep doing that. Keep chasing that. I think some partners and some women will be like, well, if I'm getting turned on, we should try to have sex right now. We should try to put something in my vagina. And that's fine. If that feels good to you, then do that. But don't feel like you have to. So if you're getting super turned on by rubbing up against him or being in a certain position, just keep going with it. I think the key to orgasm initially is to have one. Once you know what it feels like, then you'll be better at trying to navigate it. But if you've never had an orgasm, it's very difficult to know what to do about it. So chase it, see what happens and try different things. But once you start feeling stimulated, stay with that idea and keep trying that. I think another thing that can be really helpful, and this can be a delicate topic for people, is sort of self-exploration. So the trick is with couples is that if you're getting aroused, there's no like flashing light in the air that your husband can follow and be like, this is working, right? Like there's no way for him to know other than your cues. And some women are uncomfortable giving cues, or maybe they're giving cues, but they're not the right cues, or who knows what. There's not a lot of feedback for husbands. So as they're trying to stimulate, you may be trying to be nice and be like, oh, thank you, that feels good. But actually, it's not really doing anything for you. If you explore your own anatomy a little bit, you are going to have a better idea about what's working for you. Because if you want something to keep going that way, then it's hard to tell your husband that, because sometimes then they'll be so excited to keep doing what they're doing that they'll change it. They'll go faster or harder or over this way or over that way. And you're like, no, you missed it. You were on the right track and then you changed and now you missed it. And so sometimes it can be really helpful to explore your own anatomy. And like I said, that can be difficult because we talk about masturbation. One sort of, and I think that my approach to intimacy is you two are in your home together or hotel or wherever. You two are together in your private space. If something brings you closer as a couple and brings you to feel more sexual intimacy, I think it's a good thing. That's all I'll say about that part. Now, one middle ground for people who are uncomfortable with self-exploration can be guided hands. So you take your husband's hands, you put them somewhere and you move them. You do exactly what you want them to do and they just follow along. Don't try to take over, husbands, not yet. They have to explore. They have to figure out what feels good. And they can then give themselves that immediate feedback of, oh, who knew? This is what I like. And they can keep doing it. And men, you sit there and you learn. And then next time you can try it without their help. But sometimes that feedback is really difficult because there's just no direct feedback for husbands. So I think that guided hands can be really helpful. And then the last thing is a vibrator. A vibrator can really be huge for some couples. So sometimes the vibrator just has more consistent movement. And it's that same thing where something is working for a woman and then maybe her partner changes a little bit and you're like, oh, I don't know what you're doing, but whatever you're doing now isn't working. And the vibrator can just be more consistent and you can 100% use a vibrator with two of you, right? The vibrator doesn't have to be you in a quiet, dark space by yourself. It can be between you as a couple and can really give you good, consistent stimulation that is exactly what some women need to explore and figure out how to achieve orgasm. Some people are afraid that if you use a vibrator, then you won't be able to have orgasm later. And that's not true. That it's just not true. It will not be a problem for you. And I think can be a really invaluable tool between couples when they're trying to figure things out.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I really love everything that you just said, and I agree with everything that you just said. I think another thing that we talk about a lot is the importance of really being vulnerable and communicating with your partner. And that communication during intimacy is probably one of the most vulnerable things that you can experience, of saying that felt good, that didn't feel good, but communicating and learning to communicate. I think learning how to communicate outside the bedroom can translate to communicating inside the bedroom and vice versa. And I think it's cool to think about how intimacy, it really is connected, like sexual intimacy, emotional intimacy, it's all connected. And I also love what you said about how whatever can bring you two closer as a couple, that's what we're striving for. And so ultimately, I think I took a class at BYU that was all about sexual intimacy. And the professor always said, like, at the end of the day, it's between you and your spouse. You guys decide what's going to be the best. And so if you feel like, you know what, I really think we should try using a vibrator until I can figure this out, or I think we should try guided stimulation or whatever it might be, I think it's important that we don't give up on that, because that pleasing sexual intimacy, that whole experience is super important. And I think I love what you said, chase the orgasm. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think it's all about just coming closer as a couple. And that's one of the main goals of sexual intimacy. So,
well, this has been really good. We're probably going to have to put a disclaimer at the beginning. So
couples, I'm so sorry.
Couples who aren't married should not listen to this together. Just going to throw that out there. But no,
maybe
this
right.
Is,
yeah, I don't know.
No, this has been seriously so awesome. And it's going to be so helpful for so many couples. Like, I wish
this,
that
I
we
think,
could have
yeah.
heard this episode before we got married. Like, we would have, you know, it would have been way, way better for us. But anyway, we learned a lot since then, so it's all good. But seriously, super awesome. What's your like last tips, like last piece of advice, Mallory, that you'd give to this audience? Like, what else would you have, if you have anything? You might have already covered everything, but if you have anything else, what would you say?
I would say for women, since that's who I take care of, if you feel like it's been a long time and you've never been able to have an orgasm, or you don't know if you've had an orgasm, if you don't know, you probably haven't. And if you are unable to have an orgasm, that is worth seeing your doctor about, or possibly seeing a therapist about. You don't have to have something terribly wrong with you to see a therapist. Sometimes they deal with like pain and fear issues or good girl syndrome. And you don't have to be like, if you have a history of sexual abuse, it's a really good, it's very valuable, but you don't have to have that history to still see a sex therapist. So if things are, it makes me so sad. I've had patients who have been married for 15 years come and tell me, I've never had an orgasm. And it makes me so sad, because there's so much potential for closeness there in your relationship. So just don't ignore it forever. It may take you a little bit to figure it out, but don't ignore it forever. And otherwise, I would say, I would go back to the no judgment. Don't put weird rules on yourself. Don't put weird expectations on yourself. Just enjoy your partner and enjoy the excitement of discovery and being excited and aroused. And it's all good. There's all good things there.
Totally. Thank you so much. I think like Nathan said, this is going to be super helpful for so many couples, and really, really appreciate all of your wisdom that you've brought. Definitely go follow Mallory on her Instagram. I'm looking forward to all the things that I'll definitely be learning. But yeah, we'll wrap this episode up, and we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mallory.
Thank you.
See ya.